I don't want to get lost on that because we are still only at 12%. And that's a long way from 100%. So we've got a long way to go. We're doing a great job to date, as we've heard told this evening, but we can't lose sight of the fact we are still just at 12%. Good evening. Time being 7 o'clock, I call the March 2nd, 2022 meeting of the Franklin Town Council to order. Please pause for a moment of silence. Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible,
with liberty and justice for all. All citizens are now welcome to attend public board and committee meetings in person. Additionally, in an effort to maximize citizen engagement opportunities, you will be able to continue to participate remotely via phone or Zoom, using the provided phone number, or you may click the Zoom link that is on the posted agenda and on the town's website. The phone number is 929-205-6099, and the Zoom ID is 815-2786-5440. Again, and then you have to hit pound. The Zoom ID again is 815-2786-5440, then hit pound. The attached link and phone number will be active for the duration of the meeting for citizens to ask questions and or voice concerns. If residents are just interested in watching the meeting, it will also be live streamed by Franklin TV and shown on Comcast Channel 11 and Verizon Channel 29. The only other announcement I have this evening is Councilor DeLorco is going to try and Zoom in. He is at work this evening. And
there he is.
Bobby, I'm here.
Okay, thank you. So Councilor DeLorco will be participating remotely, which will require us to have all votes will be roll call. Okay, moving on. Citizens' comments. Citizens are welcome to express their views for up to 3 minutes on a matter that is not on the agenda. The council will not engage in a dialogue or comment on a matter raised during citizens' comments. The town council will give remarks appropriate consideration and may ask the town administrator to review the matter. Is there anyone in the council chambers that would like to speak on an item not on tonight's agenda? I don't see anyone in the council chambers. Is there anyone out in on the Zoom call that would like to speak on an item not on tonight's agenda? I'm not seeing anyone. Are you Alicia?
I'm not seeing anyone.
Okay, seeing none, we will move forward. The next item on the agenda is the approval of minutes from February 16th, 2022. I'd entertain a motion to approve those minutes.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion and a second. Discussion? additions, deletions? Seeing none, the vote will come on the motion. All those in favor signify by saying... Oh, I'm sorry, roll call vote. So clerk will call the roll.
Tony Ledger.
Yes.
Sheridan.
Yes.
Chandler.
Yes.
Angelo.
Yes.
Allegri.
Yes.
Hanlon.
Yes.
Jones, yes. Vice Chair. Bobby.
I'm going to unmute him.
He's coming in another...
He's coming in on a different device now.
Oh, I see.
Chair votes yes.
Chair yes. If he was in transition, he might not know that he's being called.
Oh, yeah, funeral.
Bobby, there's a vote on the floor to approve minutes February 16th. How do you vote?
Yeah.
Thanks, Bob. Okay, motion carries. We have no proclamations or recognitions this evening, nor do we have any appointments or hearings or license transactions. We're on a roll. We do have presentation and discussion this evening on one of our favorite subjects, OPEB, which is other post-employment benefits. Jamie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you said, this is an annual event. We're excited to have Dan Sherman with us, who's been doing our actuarials for some time. And I would pass it over to Dan to go through his usual presentation and give us an update on the actuarial, as well as how well the town of Franklin is doing on OPEB. Dan?
Good evening, everybody. And greetings from Keystone, Colorado. Yeah, you can probably see that in the sign behind it. So I assume everybody has my report. So what I'd like to do is go forward. I mean, first of all, can everybody hear me okay?
Yes. Please continue.
So on page 3, just want to talk a little bit about the net position. A couple more pages. So at the bottom of page 3 is basically your assets. Like everybody else around the country, you had an excellent year for the fiscal year ending June 30th, 2021. In 2020, you had assets of $6.8 million. Full contributions, that includes both a goal plus roughly $900,000 that you put in above that. $3.5 million was contributed. Benefit payments were $2.5 million. There's some expenses. And then the investment income was outstanding, $2.1 million. So your net position increased to $9.8 million in assets. Remarkable year. The following page, the top, is the liability. So a year ago, for those members who may recall, in the off year for 2020 is a roll forward. And so what we assume is from 2019 to 20, all the actuarial assumptions are realized exactly as they expect. And we thought that the liability would be at $79.8 million, and that's what you showed on your financial statements for 20. But moving forward, we have a service cost, which is the accrual for active people, interest on liability and service cost for 1 year. But then we have a very large gain, $6.1 million. Basically, the assumed increase in cost to Franklin was much less than expected. I was expecting an increase of 4.5%, and it was significantly less than that. You had other smaller gains as well in terms of retirements and mortality, but you actually did extremely well on the experience side. So that knocked you back $6.2 million. You made benefit payments to all the retirees and their beneficiaries. That came in at $2.8 million. So your liability at the end of the year was actually less than it was estimated at the beginning of the year at $79.448 million. So The assets went up, the liabilities went down, so as you can imagine, it's a very good thing. And you'll see in the following paragraph that your total position comes in at 12.3%. In other words, you're 12.3% funded on this basis. And a year ago, I think it was around 9%, if memory serves. So an outstanding year for you. Bottom of the page, breakout liability by, you know, water, sewer, solid waste, and also broken out by what happens if the investment return was increased by 1%, 8.5% is our would be the assumption versus the 7.5% that we're using. And we also do it 6.5%. And readers or your financials are interested in those amounts because it gives them some sense of what the liability might be if things go poorly and your investments do poorly at say 6.5% over the long term, what would be the liability? And if they do it very well, 8.5%, what would be the liability? So you can see large difference between the $81 million if we only earn 6.5% versus a $60 million if you're able to earn 8.5%. I would guess that over the last few years you probably exceeded the 8.5%, but we can't assume that's going to go on forever. And below that, as I said, just had the water, the sewer, pollen page, the solid waste. We broke those out, and you also see that we broke out the assets, which is what's called the planned fiduciary net position between those entities as well, show their unfunded liability. Below that is another variation, and this time it's called the trend. And a trend is simply what happens if your healthcare costs go up 1% more than expected or 1% less than expected. And in those cases, you'll notice that the values are not dissimilar from where it was above when you change the interest rate by 1% or decrease it by 1%, but it's just flipped. So you see an $84 million liability if you increase the trend by 1% and down to $58 million if you decrease. So again, this is to show the readers of your financials what the results might be if the healthcare trend and the cost rate, the inflation of healthcare costs go up more or less than expected. Up on page six is these expense. And this is not the amount that actually is money. This is actually a bookkeeping entry. So it starts with the service cost, $2.6 million. So that's just your 1 year accrual, your interest. And then you have amortizations. There's a series of amortizations where you get a gain or a loss depending upon that amortization, and we'll get into the details of those amortizations a little bit further on. But those costs, either an increase in liability or in this case decrease in liability, is something that's spread over time. You also see there's other entries that are all zero. We have earnings, and then at the bottom you'll see that the asset gain in this case is a credit of $322,000, reduces your expense that much and ends up at $5.4 million. Again, this is not money you put in, this is just a paper entry. Below that is what they call the required supplementary information, where it just shows the change in assets, the change in liabilities, your OPEB liability, your ratios at 12.3, earned payroll of $68 million, and then divide that into the liability is 102%. And as I've said to this body in the past, you guys are doing really well compared to your peers. The 102% is one of the lowest out there. I've got a couple of clients that are close to that, but typically it's 350 to 375%. So compared to your peers, you guys look really great. And so, you know, I guess my thought is, keep up the good work.
We like that. Mm.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. Well, it's going to help you because, you know, if you go out, next time you go out for a bond or you go to S&P or Moody's for rating, the fact you're 102% and you're funding this is just going to help you. Sorry to sound like a broken record for those of you who heard me before, but it does help. It absolutely helps. So on top of page 7 is why I mentioned the amortization. So asset gains are amortized over a 5-year period. You'll see the 5-year history, $1.6 million gain this past year, a couple small losses and a couple more gains. And the net is a net gain or reduction of some $300,000 on your expense. So a good thing there. And these just roll off. For example, next year, the 17 disappears, replaced by a 22. And each one gets spread along. Well, that, the experience, we had outstanding experience 2 years in a row, $6.2 million this past year and $7.6 million 2 years ago. And those get spread over the average future working lifetime of all participants. In this case, 6.68 years. And you can see how that runs out through 2027. Well, you'll continue to, that this will continue to help reduce your expense quite a number of years. 2019, we changed assumptions. That created another gain. That one's been running out to 2025. The last table I have there on that page is just a reconciliation. And this is more for the auditors than it is for anybody else. So the net OPEB liability beginning here, you have expenses, contributions, deferrals of inflows and outflows, and then end value. So this is sort of like a self-checker. If these numbers don't add up, then I know, for example, there's something wrong somewhere along in either my spreadsheets or the values or something. It won't line up. And so this is a quite understand what's going on. So I had explained to him what it is, and he decided it's a really nice table to have in the report. After that, I just have the exhibits that go through your premium costs, membership data on page 10. You can see who's, how many actives, the retirees, and so forth. And then we get into all the boilerplate stuff. So stuff that I really wouldn't worry much about. One of the things that comes out of this is some kind of a funding report. I don't have a funding report, but I do know that if you're going to fund this obligation fully, need to put in not 900 plus thousand, but probably around $4.3 million. So you had a great year, it's helped you out, but the 900,000 is still coming up short compared to a full funding schedule. I have a lot of clients that are doing what you're doing. You're putting some money aside, it helps, the rating agencies like it. But then when your pension obligation is fully funded and you only have to pay normal costs, you're gonna see a huge savings in those payments. And then at that point, you take that savings and you throw it into OPEB. And that'll allow you to keep the 7.5% discount rate. It also help you in terms of budgeting. It's less likely people have their hands out looking for money when the retirement obligation goes down. You say, no, we're putting in the OPEB. So no ways to go yet. And I've got, like 25 year schedule sort of in mind at this point. But we got some time yet to figure that all out. So that's where you stand. You guys are doing great. The numbers are good, and keep it up. And if you can put a little bit more than get over $1 million or something per year, just satisfy this obligation that much quicker. So with that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Dan. Questions, Jamie, you wanna?
Through you, Mr. Chairman, really quickly. I just wanted for the public a couple of quick things. One, assuming the capital policy goes through as we normally would, in addition to the expenditure out of the operating budget, we look to put in $1.19 million for the following fiscal year. So to Dan's comment of $900,000, he's accurate, but as we know from the policy, that number goes up every year. In both the operating budget and from free cash.
And then second, if I could just ask Dan really quick, what is OPEB? We have a couple new members, and we have some new members in the audience.
Hi, Dan.
And I just thought, Dan, you know, you could just give a quick abbreviated answer of what is OPEB.
Sure, no problem. So it stands for Other Post-Employment Benefits. And basically what it's covering is retiree medical and life insurance. And there are some plans that also have dental. There are plans out there that cover everything for a retiree except the pension. The pension, you guys are running through, you know, the county system, but anything else that's promised to a retiree as terms of a benefit, either a supplementary piece or maybe a shared piece, or maybe there's no sharing at all. I mean, I've seen everything. But basically, if you're going to cover, and a big net is medical, of course. Medical portion is probably 90-95% of the total liability is post-retirement medical. And I don't know if the person who's operating the screen can throw up exhibit page 9, exhibit 1. There you go. So this is where the big nut is. This is the Harvard Pilgrim Plan, HMO, high deductibles, the PPO, and Medicare. So those are the relative costs. And I'd say this is probably 95% of the liability is going through these medical plans for the retirees. How's that?
Perfect. Thanks, Dan. One other quick question for you. Just so that everybody, the new members of the council, as well as people watching, theoretically, this is supposed to be fully funded by when?
Actually, there is no rule there. Okay. Under GASB 7475 rules, when you put together the ARC and the actuarial required contribution, it can be amortized over no more than 30 years. However, there is no rule in terms of Massachusetts general law. There's no, the accountants just are putting in the paid for entry. There are no requirements to fund this obligation over any particular period of time. But I can tell you that doing this will save you a lot of money down the road because you're pre-funding this obligation. You're using, you know, you're getting 7.5% return on those monies. Versus, you know, a couple of basis points if the money is sitting in the, you know, a checking account or a savings account. So this reduces your obligation by a lot by doing this. It also saves you money in terms of your rating. So those entities that are not funding this obligation, doing nothing, they might be only a AA community, whereas those that are could be a AAA. It affects your rating. And if your rating is low, next time you go out for an obligation, your interest rate's higher, so you're spending more money with Wall Street. They're getting more money that they shouldn't necessarily receive. The other big advantage of funding this obligation is now you have almost $10 million as a reserve in case other things go poorly, where you can cut back on that $1.1 million you're gonna put in and pick it up again later, so it's a cushion against some, you know, rainy days. So for all those reasons, it's a good thing to do, and it's considered a best practice.
And one last one from me anyway. I really enjoy hearing how we compare to the rest of the towns, cities and towns in the state. And if you could expand on that a little bit.
Sure. So, I'll go one direction first. My town of Wakefield, where I'm on the finance committee for, 20 years, I've been pushing to fund this obligation. And one of the things that we've got to the point, we're almost 20% funded. When we started a little earlier, we put a little extra money in, we're doing, you know, really well. There are a handful of communities that are probably doing a little better than your 12.5%. Besides Wakefield, but there are most communities are in the 1, 2, 3% funded area, I don't think I've got, in terms of, you know, roughly the 35 clients that I work with, I don't think there's more than five that are above 10%. So you guys are, you know, you're definitely ahead of the game.
Super. Thank you, Dan. I love hearing that part of your report.
Yeah.
Every year.
Yeah, go ahead and pat yourself on the back.
Thanks, Dan. We will. Councilor Frangillo.
Thank you. Through you, Chair, I'm hoping to extend the dumbed down version just for myself. So at some point in the past, we started telling to attract town workers. We said, we're going to pay for your health care after retirement, which was great, except when we did that, we didn't make sure that we were putting enough money aside to actually pay for all of that. Now we have $70 million that we have promised people but haven't paid for, and in order to fully pay for it in time, we need to be putting $4.3 million aside every year. We're putting less than $1 million aside, and you're telling us we're doing a good job. Do I have that correct? How are we doing a good job? And, you know, what are the consequences of, you know, our delays? And I recognize that good job is relative to others, but...
Right. Yeah. And remember, in terms of looking at others, if you look in the rating agencies, they're looking at the others, and the fact that you're, you know, 12%+ funded, the next time you go out for a bond, it's going to help, right? It's going to save you some money on interest charges when you go out for that bond. But remember, the real goal here is to continue this process that you're doing until you become fully funded in the county retirement system. Because once you're fully funded, the county retirement system, your obligation to them is going to drop like a rock. It's going to drop like 80-90%. It's going to go down. And so it's going to generate many, many millions of dollars of savings. So I'm not sure how much you're spending now on pension appropriations, but if you find that number and take, you know, 10% of it, that's what your new number will look like once you reach full funding. At that point, you divert that savings of, you know, millions of dollars, and you dump that into OPEB. And then you'll become fully funded, you know, pretty quick if you put it all in. For example, the town of Watertown just reached full funding on their pension this year, because again, the big market upturn for 21, they reached full funding. And so now their contribution to the pension fund is dropping, I think, around $4.5 million. Almost all of it is going into OPEB. Some of it's going into a school project. And I did the calculations, and their OPEB full funding date now is something like 2031 or 2032. So they've reached it on pension, and within 10 years, they'll reach with OPEB, because they're gonna target those savings and put it into the OPEB from pension. So that's the way to think about it. You know, it's a path forward. Think of it also as total retirement appropriation. You know, combine the two costs you have, $1.1 million for OPEB and whatever the pension is, take a look at that total, then just continue that total right out into the future. And some of the money is obviously going to shift when you make full funding on pension. But it's a great path forward. It's probably, I don't know, 75-80% of the communities out there are taking that path and putting some money aside now. As soon as they get fully funded on pension, all the savings go into OPEB.
You still have the floor.
Great, that was very helpful. What if we don't fund in time or in a timely manner? Just what does that hypothetical look like, or to the towns that are very far behind us?
Well, let's say, for example, you had some tough times financially. The state aid gets cut, something like that. And you're looking at 1.1 million or whatever the amount is in OPEB, you can cut that to zero for, you know, a year or two, you know, see if you get, you know, get your, you know, financial ship righted, and then resume. If you don't resume, you know, you go to the rating agencies, you're talking to S&P, and you say, well, we had to cut back, but a year from now, we're gonna start putting money back in again, you'll be fine. But if you go many years and don't put any money aside, and let's say pension funding looks like you've pushed out, they may say, you guys aren't doing so hot here. And so you may get a small black mark if you stop funding over, you know, many years. I mean, if you stop for 2 or 3 years, I don't think they'll do anything. But if you stop for many years, that could pose a problem.
Great, thank you.
Councilor Jones, just before, because I think...
Oh, absolutely.
Just identify just for the people
Chris Sandini, Finance Director, through the chair, just one quick correction. We're required, and Mark, correct me if I'm inaccurate on this, but by Chapter 32B, to fund at least 50% for retirees, for their medical. It's not an option.
Oh, that's a different question. So that is a plan design feature. So in terms of your pay-go, you have to, if you're gonna offer a medical plan, you're absolutely right, you have to cover at least 50% of the cost of the medical coverage. But that's a completely different deal versus pre-funding the OPEB obligation.
Okay. Thank you, Dan. Councilor Jones.
Thank you, Dan, for taking me off the hook.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a little historical perspective. Going on almost 13 years of sitting on this council, let me tell you something. I have sometimes gone to bed at night after these meetings with the word OPEB ringing in my head. It was always a scary thought. It really was. I mean, I think this obligation at one point, correct me if I'm wrong, got upwards of about $95 million.
Yes, it did.
And we were scared as to how much should we contribute to, and Jeff was adamant, he's like, we have to put something towards the OPEB obligations. And it was incremental. If I recall correctly, our original obligation was about $200,000.
That's correct.
And we creeped up first. Creeped up. And now here we are, you know, years later, and we hear this wonderful report that we're doing well to work towards this obligation, and ultimately we'll meet this obligation with a resounding bell. By the way things are going, it's great to hear these numbers tonight. I was scared I was going to sit down and hear that we lost money because of the way things have been going, but this is really marked improvement. And I just wanted to thank our guests for coming out and speaking tonight on behalf of it. As far as our new councilors are concerned, or even maybe some of our other councilors, this is a very confusing thing. But really what it boils down to is for instance, through my union, I have a pension, I have an annuity, I have health care, I have a dental plan, all that other stuff, and that all needs to be funded once I'm retired. And it's money, that portion I'm putting towards, but it's also the companies and everyone else that puts money towards. We as a town put money towards all these obligations to eventually pay these things out, but they're not always ever fully vested yet. And we like to joke that we need as many apprentices as we can to get into the trade so that they can pay for my retirement. That's what it boils down to. But no, in all actuality, all joking aside, I just wanted to thank everybody. The people I really want to thank are our staff, our phenomenal staff that do a remarkable job of finding every possible way to make these numbers work. And that goes down to our Treasury Department and our administration, and thank you very much. That's all I got to say.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Councilor Chandler.
Through you, Mr. Chairman. Okay. Hi, Dan.
Hey there.
How's the skiing? Good?
Oh, we did Vail today. It was fantastic.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
I'm jealous.
First, thank you. The words remarkable and outstanding keep me very positive, like these guys. I just wanted to give a shout out to our own town employees. We're paying 32% of the premiums. And can you tell me, isn't that on the high end for towns to be paying?
But the employee portion is 32?
Yeah, so on page 9 you were talking about.
Yeah, is that on the high side? I guess it depends on the plan, because I know a number of plans where they're only covering 50%. And sometimes it's only 50% for the benefit of the spouse. So in other words, if you got a Medicare retiree, and they have a spouse, the Medicare retiree might is, you know, 75 or 80% by the town and 25 for the retiree, but the spouse might be 50. I've got some plans where the town is covering 90% and retirees are only 10. So I've got a wide range of, you know, different plans. Some plans will not cover a beneficiary, a spouse. You know, they're 100% owned, you know, for themselves. They have to cover the entire cost. For example, I got one plan where if the retiree dies and they were covering 75%, the widow is cut out completely. They could be in the plan, but they're covering 100% of the cost, which does help because of the implicit subsidy. They do get a break, but I got plans all over the map. So I really couldn't, you know, say if 32% is high, low, or otherwise, because I've got a lot of variations. I got one plan in Rhode Island, fire and police, where the city covers 100% of the cost and employees pay zero. So yeah, I have it all over the map.
Okay. Well, I'm glad we're taking care of the widows and the other spouses. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Councilor Chandler. Anyone else? Any other councilors? Councilor Cormier-Ledger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a question. I'm looking at the page 10 membership data, 1,313 school participants, if you take active and retired, out of a total of 1,782. So if I understood the presentation correctly, that's the town paying for retirement benefits for our teachers and our school administrators, that we're not passing that expense on to the school department. Is that correct?
Through you, Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Yeah.
I think that's important to note for people at home that, you know, try to wrap their head around school committee budgets and school expenses. That's a pretty large number, right?
Yes, go ahead, Jane.
Through you, Mr. Chairman, it is a large number. And I think when folks tune into the budget subcommittee next week and you see the budget model, if you can go back and look at budgets right now and look in the section 900s on the front cover sheet, it's only 4 or 5 pages, so it's not a lot. And you will see those line items broken out and you can see exactly the cost. It's rough, it's a little bit less than $1 million as a separate line item just for the retired teachers. They are also in a different plan system. They're in the GIC. I think the town about 10 years ago did that. And so there's a little variation, but to Councilor Chandler's point a moment ago, the good news is that the current offering to the current town employees is offered to everybody else. So there's no plan design changes based on your status. The only exception are the retired teachers that are under the GIC state plan.
And do you know, Jamie, are there cities and towns that do pass that expense on to their school committee budgets?
I don't know off the top of my head, but I would have no doubt, because what Dan said earlier, the variation between communities is so incredible, that this is a pretty unique situation for the town to have taken on that obligation.
Yeah, I think it's great that we do it. I'm just bringing it to everyone's attention, because I think it would make the school committee budget that much more difficult if the town didn't take this on. Right.
So you should share that point. I mean, it's gone down again incrementally. Obviously, if people pass along, the liability is going to come down. But that's $1 million or so, roughly, on average over the last 10 years that the school department has not had to fund, which obviously can go to other school expenses. Mm-hmm. And you'll see in the budget process, there are other line items like that, too, which are not placed on the school district, such as liability insurance, workers' comp. We'll go through it next week. But there are a series of line items that are like that.
Great. Thank you.
So if I may, I do a lot of breakouts for a number of communities, and schools often come up, but I am not aware of any of the any of my clients where the school has to pick up out of their budget their OPEB expense in terms of the expense that we're talking about here or the pre-funding amount. Clearly they have an expense on pension that may get run through there. But on OPEB, I'm not aware of anybody who's charging back to the schools for the OPEB costs.
Thank you, Dan. All set, Councilor Cormier-Ledger. I guess the, in conclusion, the only statement I would, first of all, I'll go to the audience. Is there anyone in the audience that has a question on this, one of our favorite subjects known as OPEB? Seeing nobody in the council chambers, is there anyone on Zoom? Yeah, Councilor DeLocco.
Just got a question. We're talking about funding the retirees. Do we have any retirees that we fully fund? Because I know, like, in here, there was a certain date where they cut off where the retirees have to pay, and the people that were on the medical before that do not have to pay. But I just don't know if we have that system.
Jamie?
We do not.
We do not, Bob.
Okay, I'm kind of curious to see if that was in the budget. Okay, that's fine.
Thank you, Councilor DeLocco. Again, just concluding, I know a couple of times Dan mentioned, you know, we could go, if things got bad, we could go a year or 2 years without funding this. I don't want to get lost on that because we are still only at 12%. And that's a long way from 100%. So we've got a long way to go. We're doing a great job to date, as we've heard told this evening, but we can't lose sight of the fact we are still just at 12%. So with that, Dan, thank you very much. Look forward to seeing you next year. Maybe from Aspen next year.
Have a great evening, John.
You too. Okay, moving on, legislation for action. Resolution 22-15, direction of issuance of requests for expressions of interest for town property containing South Franklin Congregational Meeting House located at 762 Washington Street. Clerk will read the resolution.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Resolution 22-15, direction for issuance of request for expression of interest for town property containing South Franklin Congressional Meeting House located at 762 Washington Street. Whereas the town owns improved property containing a building known as South Franklin Congressional Meeting House located at 762 Washington Street, shown on the Franklin Assessor's map of 322 as parcel 50. Title reference is Norfolk County Registry Deeds Book 4859, page 675, hereafter known as the property. And whereas property is originally owned and used for religious purposes, beginning in the mid-1800s by the First Congressional Church of Franklin, which ceased using it and deeded it to the town in 1972. And whereas the town constructed a water booster pumping station as part of its public water supply system on a small portion of the property and used the building and remaining property for your municipal historic museum until 2007, when said museum was relocated to the building at 80 West Central Street. And whereas the town has not made use of the building since 2007 and has only made use of land for operation of above described municipal water booster pump station, and whereas the town no current or anticipated use of property expect for continued operation of municipal water booster pump station, but the Franklin Town Council desires that the building and remaining land be put to productive reuse or uses in the building historic exterior to be preserved. Whereas the Franklin Town Council is willing to consider disposing of property for said purposes and seeks input as to potential reuse and or redevelopment of building and land, except for land in which municipal water booster pump station is located, and reuse and redevelopment to be subject to a permanent historic preservation restriction and or an affordable housing restriction. Now therefore be it resolved that the town of Franklin, acting by and through its town council, one, directs the town administrator to cause a request for expressions of interest to be prepared and issued for property, except for land in which the municipal water booster pump station is located, and with provisions for permanent historic preservation restriction and or affordable housing restrictions with purposes due No responses due no later than Friday, April 1st, 2022. Directs the Economic Development Subcommittee to review and evaluate all responses and to provide the Town Council with a written report of its evaluation. This resolution should become effective according to the provisions of the Town of Franklin Home Rule Charter.
Move resolution 22-15.
Second.
Motion and a second. Discussion. Jamie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good job,
to the council. Absolutely, Councilor Frangillo, nice pinch hit. So a couple things. Number one, I want to be clear with everybody. It's called an expression of interest for a reason. It's people to show us their expressions of interest. Right. This is not an RFP. We are not selling the property right now. This is not a bidding war of folks to buy the property. This is similar to the Red Brick Schoolhouse proposal, where we're trying to get ideas from folks. And really, this is designed for individuals or organizations who want to put pen to paper and actually show us what their ideas are, not just pie in the sky ideas, you know, nothing with no finances. I mean, we need to see something, I think, from folks and organizations that have a true vested interest in it, given the context of the discussion from the council, especially with the preservation restriction issues. Number two, the document will likely go out on Monday, if not before that. And most notably in there is an open house that will be scheduled for March 14th from 10 to noon for prospective bidders to go inside the building to take a look. I've encouraged a lot of the folks that have called our office who have great questions before they get a little too excited. They may want to at least look inside because from the outside it looks one way, from the inside it looks a little different. But all that being said, this is pretty exciting. You know, this is the furthest I think we've brought this project along in this idea. There's certainly been some great media attention, and we appreciate Heather McCarron and the Milford Daily News and for putting an article out there on this that was quite thorough, but also WGBH then called me that day and did a 30-minute radio interview with me that then was broadcast online and on the radio over the course of that weekend. That radio interview clearly got out to a much wider audience because we were getting calls from all over the place, which I knew would happen on Monday. But it was encouraging to see the interest, and we have certainly had a handful of Franklin developers and builders and other interested parties at least touch base and call with some conceptual questions. So all in all, this will authorize me to send out the expression for interest. Thank you.
Thank you, Jamie. Councilor Plagrie?
Through the chair, that sounds great. I'm glad you got so much interest from people too. But I mean, when we do this, are we going to let them know exactly what can be done there and what can't be? I don't mean about the outside facade, but I'm just as a guess. Say to turn it into some type of a country store. Do we know that they could actually do that? Parking requirements and all? I mean, perhaps Gus should be able to say something ahead of time.
Attorney Lanza? Attorney Lanza.
Thanks for that.
Back you go. Surround. Surround. That's all. Boy, am I dating myself.
It would not be unusual in a hypothetical transaction, whether it was private or public, that a prospective purchaser who had contemplated something like that would have a due diligence period, and we would have to agree in advance that there was some potential and give them the opportunity to inquire about various land use boards, the planning board, ZBA, CONCOM, whatever, in terms of getting an approval to proceed.
And I think in its current footprint, there wouldn't be enough room for parking. If we were looking to keep the actual footprint of the building, there isn't enough land there for
a retail. So you'd be looking at least a variance of zoning relief.
Yeah.
That's too bad, because stop and think, uptown we don't have any type of requirements, up until now, any kind of requirements for the little stores and that to have parking. Yet now for a place like this that we have quite a large area, we should be able to do something, so.
That said, our zoning board of appeals historically has shown a fair amount of flexibility.
Well, I would hope.
So.
I would hope so. Okay, you said an open house, what was the date again?
March 14th from 10 a.m. to noon.
10 to noon, okay. What will happen with the articles that are inside there? Not ours from Father Museum, but we have church furniture that's there. Is that something we could do something with now?
Through you, Mr. Chairman, I don't know. I mean, we can do whatever we want. We own the property. If people want to take out the pews, you know.
Yeah, I don't think there's much there but pews.
No, there's other things there.
But I mean,
a large, I don't know what you would call it, but it's beautiful furniture in that. In fact, just thinking ahead, I was, had a thought of the chapel down here, the New England Chapel, that I didn't know perhaps they would be interested in that. They had a pulpit that was there. They had, I'm trying to think, we had hoped to get it into the museum and we brought it up there, but there was certainly no place to put it. But if that's something that we can do ahead of time, perhaps we can get in touch with these places that might be interested to, I don't know who would give it to them or if they would have to buy it. So it's something to think about.
Mr. Chairman, we'd have to take a look at the value of all the goods. You know, this kind of threshold to where you'd have to put it up to bid for surplus property. Some of it we could probably donate. I think the other trickier question is, what do people want to save and what do they not want to save?
Yeah. And well, there's only those few pieces, remember.
Yeah.
Excuse me. There's only a few pieces, and it isn't something that we bought. Yeah. Those were left there from the church. So if they could go back to a church or a chapel or whatever, I think that that might be a good idea.
Absolutely.
Okay, I think it's on the road there, so we'll see what happens. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Councilor Pellegrini. Councilor Sheridan, I'll go right down the line.
So, please, Mr. Chair. So, somebody has an idea but wants the town to keep it and make a profit trip. That's effectively a possibility too, right?
That is probably the most likely outcome.
Yeah.
That public-private partnership ultimately is probably what's going to be able to make something work. I agree.
I'm good.
Yeah, you're all set.
Yeah.
Councilor Frangillo?
Great, thank you. Through you, I did. A few questions. Thanks for differentiating this is not an RFP. What is one's motivation to share ideas? Why?
Through you, Mr. Chair, I mean, ultimately, I think to pretend that we have it all figured out is probably, in this case, given the financial obstacles, is hard to do. And even the calls that I've gotten have been creative, even if not possible. And I think the expression of interest is at least to get it out there and get people to think. And I think we've probably had more interest in this building than we've probably ever have and an exponential factor, and that's just simply trying to get people to think of ideas. Particularly in the case of the developer community, you know, I know that a handful of them, they're out there talking, they're thinking, so that's a good thing, and maybe they can come back with an innovative idea that might work.
I think, Attorney Sorrell, did you have a follow-up to that? Go ahead.
To the chair, when you actually get ready to dispose of the property, there's a formal legal process and requirements, and you have to be very specific. Is it going to be strictly a request for bids and go with the highest bid, or are you going to have consider other considerations with the request for proposals, for instance, which you would take into account uses and other things, but then you have to have criteria stated. So this would provide some guidance to the town in advance, knowing whether there is or isn't interest out there and in what areas, so that we can craft something that's going to bring in the maximum amount of response.
Councilor Frangillo.
Okay, so I think what I'm hearing is that someone would be motivated to express interest because they want that RFP that they can then bid on, right? They're trying to tell us, yes, offer an RFP so that we can then bid on that.
Correct.
Okay, that's helpful. But I had a question about enough time, and you partially, like whether the open house was too quick and whether the expression of interest was too quick. I think you partially got that, and I did want to give a shout out to Heather McCarron, who that really did gain some traction. Do we think that's enough time because that piece was out there?
I would hope so. I mean, I think there's, you know, it's difficult to say. Usually these things are out for 30 days or so. Sometimes by statute, in the case of what Mark had mentioned a moment ago, we'd have to put something out for maybe 14 days. So 30 days is 30 days. If nothing comes back, we can always extend it. We can also offer another open house later this spring. So I think it's just the start of the race.
Yeah. Great, that's helpful. And the last thing, I love that we have permanent historic preservation restriction, right? The entire point of this was us saying, we think the building has importance, has value to the town. We like the ability to see it. We just don't need it to be a use for the town. I'm less interested in the affordable housing restriction. Certainly not because I'm opposed to affordable housing, but simply because it's small space. It's not going to do any real dent to our affordable housing, but would limit the potential uses of that space. I don't need to empower you to put that restriction on, and if I could take that out of this, I would. On the flip side, I would like to put in, and maybe this comes with the RFP, you know, a preference for an arts or other community organization space. Not a restriction, but certainly a preference to when we get to the RFP time. I don't know if you just need me telling you this or us telling you this, or if we could actually strike it from here.
The only way to strike it would be to offer an amendment to the motion. Jamie?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The only thing I would caution really quickly, unless somebody has parking somewhere else, you know, the idea of this being a civic institution or a place of congregation at a large level is going to be very challenging. And so I do want to give a quick plug and shout out to Alan Earls, who hopefully is listening, who sent me a PowerPoint presentation on something he was working on, and he had examples of old churches turned into housing. And the examples were actually incredibly inspiring and actually put some wind in my sails to really think that this was feasible, possible. The council can do what it wants in terms of that thing, but I just want to caution folks on the uses.
Thank you. Did you have a follow-up to that?
Mr. Chair, to the council, to the chair, this is not a legally binding document in any respect, mm-hmm. So it's more in the nature of giving notice to people and keeping our options open. So we don't want somebody to come in with some elaborate use of the property only to find out we've got a water booster pumping station in the middle of the property and it's staying. The same we got respect is don't come in with something, just understand that the town's keeping its options open at this point. We clearly, there seems to be consensus for the exterior being preserved, and there may be some consensus to make it an affordable unit. So it's just keeping the options open. It's not a requirement.
Okay. Thank you. And this is my last idea. If that's the case, I'm all for it. If the best option that comes back is affordable housing, you know, I'm all in. Right. My fear was not of it being affordable housing, but rather us mandating it and limiting the options that come back. I would like to mandate the preservation of the exterior.
Thank you. And we would do that when we went out with an RFP. We would. Councilor Hamblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair to Jamie, when you said that WGBH called you, I thought maybe this old house wanted to renovate it. And I was like really excited because I love those guys. I actually had the same sort of question that Councilor Frangillo had about the length of time for the responses. And so I just thought if we want a response that has a full plan in it, is April 1st enough time?
Mr. Chair, I mean, we can extend it. We did talk about it, and we're happy to, if somebody wants to make an amendment and put in there April 30th, you know, that would give a couple, or April 29th would be a Friday. You could certainly do it to April 29th. It would certainly give more folks to be able to put forth ideas. And then I'm happy to do a second open house in April if folks thought that was a good idea.
You still have the floor, Councilor.
I'm hearing people say, okay, so if we wanted to move this out to April 30th, 29th,
I'm just making up a date.
To make a motion to...
Make an amendment to the...
Make an amendment to the motion from April 1st to April 29th. Is that it? Okay.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion and a second. Discussion on the motion. Councilor Frondell.
So, I brought this up, but the reason, it's an expression of interest. I don't know how much goes into an expression of interest, right? Like, do you need a full design?
No.
It just like, hey, I looked at it.
Yeah.
I thought we could make it a basketball court, and that's it. And then like, okay. And then you go forward.
All right, so.
Both, right? I mean, that would be why we wouldn't need to push it up. Because in my mind, it was like, oh, I need a full like plan. I'm like, you can't pull that around in 2 weeks.
That's exactly why I asked for it.
Through you, Mr. Chair, we're not in any rush here. We really have no problem extending it. It probably is the best thing too. And to Councilor Frangillo's question, somebody could give us a scratch note of a napkin with an idea for the basketball court, and some folks may very well come to us with a reasonably good engineered sketch of what they think. And that's kind of to Mark's point a minute ago, leaving all the options open. So I think extending it is probably the best thing. And then in the expression for interest, we'll put another date for for an open house as well.
Okay. We have
okay,
to vote
further, on the no, further discussion. Excuse me. Further discussion on the amendment. The date would be April 29th.
April 29th. Sorry.
Further discussion on the amendment. Councilor Chandler.
Am I still going to be able to speak to the other?
Yeah.
Okay. Then I'm ready.
Okay. Seeing no further discussion on the amendment, we will vote on the amendment to change the date from April 1st to April 29th. It's a roll call vote. Clerk will call the roll.
Cormier Ledger.
Yes.
Sheridan.
Yes.
Chandler.
Yes.
Frangillo.
Yes.
Pellegrini.
Yes.
Amblin.
Yes.
Jones. Yes. Vice Chair.
Yes.
Chair.
Yes.
9-0 for men, sir.
Motion carries.
Thank you.
Further discussion on the motion, Councilor Chandler.
Through you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to reiterate how important it is to me that the exterior is kept. I mean, when he threw out that basketball quote, I just want to say I think it's important to a lot of us.
I think it's important to all of us, and I think as we get to that point where we went out with an RFP, we would certainly be putting in the RFP probably everything but a basketball court.
Okay, that's right.
Thank you,
Mr.
Chairman. Thank you, Councilor Chandler. Any further discussion on the motion? Councilor DeLorco, are you all set? I believe he is.
No, Tommy, hold on.
Okay.
No, I kind of agree, but I kind of agree with Jamie and Mark. We're going to see what it comes back with. I mean, leave all our options open because we could get some great ideas here.
Yeah.
We just don't know what they are until we get everything in. I mean, I think it's a great idea.
Great. Thank you. Clerk will call the roll. On the motion to approve resolution 22-15 as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Resolution 22-15 as amended. Cormier Ledger?
Yes.
Sheridan?
Yes.
Chandler?
Yes.
Angela?
Yes.
Pellegrini?
Yes.
Amblin?
Yes.
Jones? Yes. Vice Chair?
Yes.
Chair?
Yes.
9-0, sir.
Motion carries. As amended. Resolution 22-16, authorization for town administrator to negotiate and execute new agreement between town and Franklin Community Cable Access Incorporated for PEG programming and access services. Clerk will read the resolution.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is resolution 22-16. Authorization for town administrator to negotiate and execute a new agreement between the town and Franklin Community Cable Access Incorporated for PEG program and access services Whereas by resolution 12-13, the Franklin Town Council authorized the Franklin Town Administrator to execute an agreement between town and Franklin Community Cable Access Incorporated, here and after known as the FCCA, to provide paid programming and access services to the town and its residents. And whereas the town administrator did execute said agreement, but it expired by its terms in 2016, and whereas the Franklin Town Council wishes to continue to make provisions for the PEG programming and access services to be provided to town and its residents, and FCCA is willing to continue to provide the same. Now, therefore be resolved by the Franklin Town Council that the town administrator is hereby authorized to negotiate and execute a new agreement between town of Franklin and Franklin Community Cable Access Incorporated for FCCA to provide PEG programming and access services to town and its residents, said agreement to be in substantially the form attached here to as exhibit one, provided that the town administrator is authorized to revise any of the terms, provisions, or language contained in exhibit one if he determines that it is in the town's best interest to do so. This resolution should become effective according to the provisions of the town of Franklin Home Rule Charter.
Move resolution 22-16.
Second.
Second.
Motion and second. Thank you, Councilor DeLucco. Jamie?
Through you, Mr. Chairman. So this is to reauthorize the established relationship and agreement between Franklin Community Cable Access and the town of Franklin for PEG services. The agreement technically ended a few years ago, but this will give it a new 10-year term. We have included in the packet the agreement. And in blue, I believe, are most of the respective changes. And happy to answer any questions from folks about any of them. Thank you.
Thank you, Jamie. Councilor Pellegrini.
And this doesn't, through the chair, thank you. This doesn't have anything to do with the cable companies. This is just the access group that we're working with, right?
Through you, that's correct.
Okay, I'm sorry, because I thought it had something to do with that. And I was going to ask to be a part of any type of agreement that we would have with the cable companies.
Yep.
When that comes up.
When that comes
through. Thank you.
Yes.
Through you, Mr. Chairman, to Council Blair's point, it's a point I'm glad you emphasized, and it really bears repeating. This is not an agreement with Comcast or Verizon. This is an agreement between the town of Franklin and the folks in the booth over here.
And the little cubby.
Great clarification. Great clarification.
There's some feedback over there. Further discussion. Councilor Chandler.
Through you, Mr. Chairman. One quick question. This might go to Jamie. And I don't think Chris is making this decision. When somebody wants to do a show down there, okay, who decides that's an appropriate show or not an appropriate show? Because everybody's contributing to this.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I believe it's a board of directors decision through the executive director and part executive director.
Yeah, executive.
Executive director.
Director.
Mm-hmm. So, what would someone's recourse be if this board said no?
That someone just wouldn't do the show.
Okay. So it's that board, and we actually appointed that board, correct? Mm-hmm.
No, so you appoint two seats.
Two seats. Yeah. Two seats.
And who appoint? And then the cable company appoints?
No.
Not the cable company. The school
committee. The school committee has an appointment. I'm trying to read through the.
Yeah,
it's
cable laid out.
Right. No. I'm asking. I'm just asking. I just want to know who made these decisions. Like, who? What gets to be put on TV?
So here's
Attorney Sorrell. Sorry. Do you have the breakdown, Jamie?
Yeah.
Why do you read the breakdown?
Governance and Access Corporation. The board of directors shall, in their ordinary circuit, have a minimum of 7 directors. In no event shall the board of directors have greater than 9 directors. The board of directors, not Pete. 2 directors shall be appointed by the town administrator, subject to confirmation by the council. 1 director shall be selected by the Franklin School Committee. Remaining directors shall be appointed by the board of directors and must be residents of the town of Franklin and associated with business, corporation, organization, institution, or other entities located within the town of Franklin. I'll end there.
Yeah.
That's probably the relevant part.
Attorney Sorrell.
So for the benefit of those at home and the newer councilors, originally, when I first got here, the town operated the cable system. And that for a number of reasons, that wasn't a good business model, if you will. So it's determined to set up a separate nonprofit corporation to operate it. Now, because it's a nonprofit, its membership is open, in this case, to all residents, all subscribers of the town, so you have that input. So it operates like a regular corp, like any other corporation, has an annual meeting, and they control the directors that aren't specifically otherwise provided for. So everybody has input. So to your question, if you or others were not satisfied with how it was the corporation and the cable studio were being operated, you have the ability to participate in that process. Otherwise, we've set up a separate entity. We're not responsible for employees. We're not responsible from a liability standpoint for what gets broadcast. It's at arm's length, but we do have some measure of control. This contract just formalizes it.
Okay, so it's basically up to that board. So if you didn't like something, get involved and get on the board. I got you. All right, thank you.
Thank you, Councilor Chandler. Any further comments? Anyone in the audience? Anyone on Zoom? Okay, seeing none, the vote will come on the motion to approve resolution 22-16, a majority votes required. Clerk will call the roll.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Hamlin.
Yes.
Allegri.
Yes.
Virgilio.
Yes.
Chandler.
Yes.
Sheridan.
Yes.
Cormier Ledger.
Yes.
Jones. Yes. Vice Chair.
Yes.
Chair.
Yes.
Thank you, sir.
Motion carries. Resolution 22-17, cable funds in support of PEG service and programming per Mass General Law, Chapter 44, Subsection 53F and 3/4. Clerk will read the resolution.
Here we go again. Resolution 22-17, appropriation cable funds in support of PEG service and programming per Mass General Law, Chapter 44, Subsection 53F and 3/4. Total amount requested, $89,815.32. The purpose is to appropriate $89,815.32 from PEG access and cable-related funds created under Mass General Law Chapter 44, Subsection 53F3/4, representing the amount received in previous quarter to be paid to the Franklin Cable Access Corporation to operate the Cable Access Studio and otherwise fund its operations. Motion being moved and voted by the Town Council that the sum of $89,815.32 be appropriated from PEG access and cable-related funds created under Mass General Law Chapter 44, Subsection 53F3/4, to be paid to the Franklin Cable Access Corporation to operate the Cable Access Studio and otherwise fund its operation. This resolution shall become effective according to the provisions of the Town of Franklin Local Charter.
Second. Is that a motion?
Sure.
I'll make the motion.
Okay. Okay. No, I'll say move resolution 22-17.
Second.
Motion and second.
Thanks, Bobby.
Okay. We have a motion and second discussion. I don't think there's a discussion needed. This is something that comes before us almost every meeting. So, or it feels like almost every meeting. Is there any discussion from the council? Anyone in the audience? Seeing none, the vote will come on the motion to approve resolution 22-17. Again, a majority votes required. Clerk will call the roll.
Allegri.
Yes.
Hamlin.
Yes.
Chandler.
Yes.
Angelo.
Yes.
Sheridan.
Yes.
Ledger.
Yes.
Jones. Yes. Vice Chair.
Yes.
Chair. Yes.
Yes.
Nice.
Motion carries. Resolution 22-18, gift acceptance. Veterans Services Department, $350. Clerk will read the resolution.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is resolution 22-18, acceptance of gifts. Veterans Services Department, whereas the Veterans Services Department has received 4 generous donations totaling $350 to be used at the discretion of the department as follows. Donation summary, Veterans Services Department, 1 Veterans Municipal Assistance Fund, $350. See attached memo dated February 25th, 2022. Now therefore be resolved that the Town Council, the Town of Franklin, on behalf of Veterans Services Department, gratefully accepts this these generous donations to be used at the discretion of the Veterans Services Department as described above. Resolution to become effective according to the provisions of the Town of Franklin.
jargon.
Move resolution 22-18.
Second.
Motion and a second. Discussion. Jamie.
Thank all the donors.
Councilor Jones.
Thank you. Much appreciated.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, the vote will come on the motion to approve resolution 22-18. A majority votes required. Roll call vote. Clerk will call the roll.
All right, Hamlin.
Yes.
Pellegrini.
Yes.
Virgilio.
Yes.
Chandler.
Yes.
Sheridan.
Yes.
Coleman Ledger.
Yes.
Jones, yes. Vice Chair.
Yes.
Chair.
Yes.
Nine zeros.
Motion carries. Subcommittee report. Yeah.
Jamie usually thanks all these people.
Yeah, you said that.
Did you say that?
Yeah.
Sorry, so I was thinking elsewhere.
That's okay. It's okay, no problem. No problem.
Make sure.
No, he moved it.
Oh, this one says town and then subcommittee.
Okay, on the first.
It's okay. You're the boss.
Yep. We're gonna go to subcommittee reports because that's what I had on the first one. Capital budget subcommittee.
We had one meeting. We did partial talks on all of those committees and departments. We're going to have another meeting tomorrow night. Jamie, you had said next week when we were talking, when you talked about the capital budget.
It's tomorrow night.
It's tomorrow night at 5:30.
That's correct.
And here or the?
That's a good question.
It's in the
training room.
Training room. Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Councilor Pellegrini. Budget subcommittee has not met yet. We're meeting next week.
March 10th?
10th.
6:30.
Here.
Here.
In the council chamber. Okay, economic development. I believe they had a meeting earlier this evening. Councilor Hamlin.
Yes, we did. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, the Economic Development Subcommittee Plus, which is the steering committee of the Franklin for All Zoning, met and we further discussed the meeting, which is the public forum on March 7th, which will be actually here in the chambers. We have a change of venue, but you can sign up and Zoom in, or you could come in here on March 7th at 7. That's right? 7? and we will just, there'll be a presentation, and then we'll take questions and try to answer questions, and it will go at least until 8:30, and we could continue that if everyone has more questions. We also discussed the parking issues that came up on the last meeting on the 16th, and we sort of came up with some ideas for Jamie to take to the chief and Lieutenant Riley to work on a few more bylaws or changes for us to discuss later. So, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Councilor Hamlin. Okay, Town Administrator's Report.
All set, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Maybe we should put that one out. Yeah, there we go. Everybody already said it.
Exactly. future agenda items. Councilor Cormier Ledger.
Nothing at this time, Mr. Chairman.
Councilor Chandler.
Nothing at this time.
Councilor Pellegrini.
Nothing at this time.
Councilor Sheridan.
Yes, please, Mr. Chair. Can we get an update from the Historical Commission about the two historical districts?
About the
historical districts?
Sure. In fact, it's on the goals. Well, it was on the town council goals because one of our longest serving staff member actually has done some research on our National Register of Historic Places, and I was hoping at some point they could do a presentation. I don't think they're ready to go yet, so that might not still be for a few more months.
Okay. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Councilor Frangillo?
Nothing
at this time. Councilor Hamlin?
Nothing at this time. Thank you.
Councilor Jones?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Just like to follow up on future agenda item to have our congressional delegation come in.
They are coming in May 4th.
May 4th.
And actually, we do have Congressman Touch and Claw's coming on May 4th.
Excellent.
So I reached out to him about a month ago, and he responded and said he'd love to come. So we have it set for the 4th, correct?
That's correct.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Okay. Councilor DeLocco.
I thought you forgot about me.
No. Could never forget you. Okay. And I love the stocking hat.
Yeah. That's
great. Yeah. Cool.
Any future agenda items?
Nothing at this time.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Councilor comments. Councilor Sheridan.
Well, congratulate the Franklin High boys and girls basketball team for making a tournament. Mm-hmm. And the wrestling team, which included my son, that have been able to make the states, a few made states. And also the father that's going on Ukraine. I contacted Pastor Jacob from Methodist Church because we have a Ukrainian parish right next door in Woonsocket. I suggested that the son's show some sort of solidarity. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you, Councilor Sheridan. Councilor Frangillo?
Echo a lot of what Councilor Sheridan just shared. Only other thing I'd add, I went to a geography night last night at the high school that was put on by their Diversity Awareness Club. And it's now my second time going back to the high school recently, and I'm very impressed by the level of student engagement in different clubs. I went to the Green Team and now Diversity Awareness Club, and we were met with students at the beginning, all the way down the hallway. There were tons of people there. It was a fantastic event, a really good showing from the community, attended from the community. Just a reminder that our students are doing really great work and making us proud.
Thank you, Councilor Frangillo. Councilor Hamblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would also like to echo my fellow counselors' comments about the students in the high school, their academic and their sports. I think that volleyball was in the finals, or there's just like every time you look, there's another team that's won, and there's, I think there's a play also as well, right?
Yes.
I just wanted to say that I think that's a great idea to show solidarity for the Ukrainian people, and I think we should all keep them in our thoughts. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilor Hamblin. Councilor Colmia Ledger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to express my congratulations and welcome to the owners of Railery in Birchwood. I had the opportunity to go to both over the past week. Great new restaurants in town, wonderful staff, great offerings. I ended up at the Birchwood, I think, 6 times in the last week. And every time I was there, I was greeted with, you know, such warmth, but also was a great opportunity just to talk to people in town and, you know, hear some of their concerns, and hope that that can continue. Electric Youth 22 put on a fantastic performance at the Performing Arts Center Black Box over the weekend. I mean, talk about looking at high school students give it their all. These Franklin kids, they danced, they sang, they didn't stop smiling, they put on a workout. I was exhausted, you know, just watching them for an hour and a half. But truly, some of our best up there giving it all for our entertainment, and good luck to all of them. I know there's some seniors that are auditioning and moving on. And just finally, to echo fellow counselors, thoughts and prayers to the people of Ukraine. What a terrible, terrible situation we're watching unfold on our TV sets, and to all the personnel over there from the US and from NATO that are in harm's way, you have our support, and you're in our prayers too.
Thank you, Councilor Colmia-Ledger. Councilor Chandler.
Through you, Mr. Chairman. Chris, you might want to show Ben Franklin right there. It says March 2nd. Happy birthday, Franklin.
Happy birthday.
I don't want to forget that. I was just looking at that. I almost didn't realize that it was our birthday today. So I just saw everybody. I know.
And lastly, again, my thoughts and prayers are with everyone in the Ukraine, what the Russians are putting them through. That's it, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Councilor Chandler. Councilor Pelletier.
I have a couple of things, Mr. Chairman, through you. First of all, Stevie Colucci, one of our DPW workers, his mother passed away a couple of days ago, so our deepest sympathy to him. I'd like to mention the senior center, the gift store, just to take a visit up there. They have so many beautiful things in there, and they just got it all set up now for St. Patrick's Day. So if you're looking for cards or gifts for someone, please stop in there. They do a wonderful, wonderful job. I've been up there a little more than usual because I started to play cards up there. And I'm playing with some women that, and it's called Hand and Foot. It's not poker because I don't know how to do that. But it's, I'm sitting with some women that are from Medway, and just how they rave about our senior center. They just love it up there so, so, so much. So I'm very proud to sit there and listen to them when they say that's for sure. And I'm happy to hear that the fire department is still volunteering their time on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Yep. Tuesdays and Thursdays, yes.
Tuesdays and Thursdays, and they're doing cooking up there. But that we have, from what I understand, hired someone now?
Not yet.
Not yet.
Not sure where that rumor came from, but that's okay.
So it came from up there. So.
I thought it was one of the firefighters. It might have been a lot of people.
Hope and pray.
So again, if you have a chance, stop in the gift store. It's a wonderful place, and they do a great job. The birthday was my thing that I was going to say tonight. I had put it up. Okay. I put it on Facebook today. 244 years old.
Wow.
Okay. And we look better each year with everything that's going on. That's for sure. Our community is great.
6 years.
I think, let's see here. Go. Echo what the two of you had said about Ukraine. Our hearts are broken, and we just want to see this over and not see any more deaths. I thank you very much, and Mr. Chairman, I'm all set.
Thank you, Councilor Pellegrini. Councilor Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I mean, most of what has needed to be said has been said. My only comment really just has to do with the fact that I would like to express my support on the state's legislation looking to ban any Russian products that would benefit the Russian government. I want to specifically state that anything that benefits the Russian government, because I really truly don't believe that the Russian people have their heart into this. I think this is really just the government that's doing this. And anything that would benefit the Russian government needs to be banned and taken off the shelves, and we really need to show that we're serious about showing our support for what, you know, for Ukraine against what Russia's doing. Everyone else said everything. Other than that, I really just wish everybody has a wonderful happy birthday. Ben's never looked so good.
Thank you, Councilor Jones. Councilor DeLorco.
Hey. I kind of echo everybody else, what everybody else said, especially the Ukraine. I agree with Councilor Jones on that. Unfortunately, I think that he has to be stopped within, and I agree that the Russian people really don't want to be there. And I believe that if anyone's going to stop them, it has to be them, because I really don't want boots on the ground over there. I hope we don't have to go over there and have to stop this and help those poor people over in Ukraine. So my prayers are with them, and you know, Stevie Colucci, his mother, my condolences to them too, just everybody stay safe and pray that this ends. So thank you
Councilor DeLorco. Again my sympathies go out to the Colucci family, and obviously our thoughts and prayers are with the Ukrainian citizens. As well, I'd like to congratulate the Franklin Athletics group from the fall and winter sports. They've just been phenomenal, and it's great to see. And I think I'd be remiss if I didn't congratulate Councilor Pellegrini's grandson, who doesn't go to Franklin High School, but he finished third as a sophomore in the state at 170, I think, weight class in wrestling. And he ended up losing to the eventual winner, 1-0. So wow. He had a great performance, and congratulations.
And he came in first in the states as a sophomore. This was the regional, and then we had the All-State coming up this weekend. So for 170 pounds, he's doing great. Thank you for doing that.
You're very welcome. So with that, we do have a need for executive session. For purposes of collective bargaining, all town unions to discuss strategy with respect to collective bargaining. If an open meeting may have a detrimental effect on the bargaining position of the public body, and the chair so declares. And we will not exit, come back to open session from executive session. Clerk will read the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to make a motion to enter into executive session for the purposes of collective bargaining for all town unions to discuss the strategy with respect to collective bargaining as an open meeting may have a detrimental effect on the bargaining position of the public body, and the chair so declares, we will not reconvene after executive session.
Second.
Motion and a second. Roll call vote. Clerk will call the roll.
Cormier Ledger.
Yes.
Sheridan.
Yes.
Chandler.
Yes.
Angelo.
Yes.
Pellegrini.
Yes.
Hamlin.
Yes.
Jones. Yes. Vice Chair.
Yes.
Chair.
Yes. Thank you, one and all.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. And by the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.